The information provided in this podcast is meant for entertainment purposes only. Topics discussed are related to weight loss, diet, and exercise, and the views expressed by the hosts and guests are based on their personal experiences. The Weighing In with Patrick podcast is not affiliated with WW International, Inc., and the content presented is not endorsed by, nor should it be considered representative of, the official views or policies of WW International, Inc. This podcast does not constitute a counseling relationship and does not offer mental health or medical advice. Always consult with your physician or healthcare professionals before making any changes to your diet or exercise routine.
We talk about, you know, what we want to do in the next 10 years, what we want to do in the next 20 years. As yeah. I said, she's the planner. So it makes sense to put that out there and really start to think about what that means. And part of that means, well, if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to go to Europe, if I'm going to walk across things, if I'm going to look across all the U.S., right, I'm going to need to be able to walk. And so I need to lose weight in order to do that. I think they say every 5 pounds of weight you lose is 30 or 40 pounds off your knees on an ongoing basis. Sure. And the stamina was much better. I mean, I'm able to, you know, thankfully my Apple Watch continues to tell me how either good or bad my health is, but it does say that I'm able to recover faster than I have in the past. And it kind of shows a good trend. And I'm certain that part of it is being able to not only lose weight, but keep the weight off. And, and when I exercise and I get winded, I can gain that. I can get that win back faster than I could in the past.
This is episode number 8 of the Weighing In with Patrick podcast. My guest this time around is one Bruce Laverne. He is he's really been coming to the meetings as pretty much as long as I have. In Rock Hill, both he and his partner Johanna, who I also spoke with, and Johanna will be coming up in a later episode. That will be episode 9. But Bruce really spends time during our conversation, kind of going through what his experiences have been from being a small boy here in the Charlotte area, what he remembers about Charlotte from those times when he was a young lad coming up, and how he went from kind of, you know, not experiencing issues with weight to kind of all of a sudden experiencing issues with weight. And how they were addressed or not addressed, some complicating factors that made it somewhat difficult to lose weight, and some other diets that he has tried, and what he thinks of WW and why he thinks it. And he shares some tidbits about some talents that I know took me by surprise when he told me some of his hidden talents. I'm quite impressed. But I do hope that you enjoy my conversation with Bruce. Part 2 should be coming up a week after this one is released at audio.com. Anyways, we were talking last week during our session, during our meeting, about the technique, which was, how did it go? Skip it and, it was shrink it, swap it, skip it, or savor it. And, you know, whenever I always have this kind of knee-jerk reaction when I hear savor it, right? Like, you just have it, right? If you're thinking about it, just have it, because I am an abstainer. And I've got to remember that not everybody is an abstainer from certain foods. And I always have this kind of like reflexive, my arm wants to shoot up in the air, and, well, you know, I'm an abstainer and I can't always have that, you know, but whatever, man, get over yourself. So I just work the program that I know is helpful for me. And if it's a food that, like, you know, you probably won't ever catch me eating a McDonald's hamburger. If you do, please come and say hello, because I may have to explain that. But I will usually skip things such as that. And I may shrink other foods, I suppose, at other times. Thanksgiving is a good example of that, where, you know, it used to be when we would go shopping for Thanksgiving, I might team up with my awesome spouse, and we would go to the grocery store, and instead of, you know, we would go and get, like, ingredients for, say, mashed potatoes, and we would get, you know, four, five, or six giant baking potatoes and have enough mashed potatoes for the rest of the week. Now we just get one potato for me, one potato for her, and that's it. So if you want to have any potato after that week, well, you need to shrink whatever you're going to put on the, what you would normally put on your plate, right? So I am also kind of a swap it guy. So I stopped eating pure cane sugar, and I'm not a big fan of the, you know, the yellow, pink, blue packet sweeteners, just not because I think they are inherently evil, but I just think that they just kind of taste like, you know, somebody sprinkled some sugar on, you know, a piece of wood, right? Like, doesn't really do what I need it to do. And one of the sweetener substitutes that I have found that definitely, I think, tastes like pure cane sugar, you know, normal table sugar, but it doesn't have an impact on my glycemic levels, is something called monk fruit sweetener. It's just slightly more expensive than normal sugar, but these days everything is more expensive. So monk fruit sweetener, the kind that I use is by the Lakato, something like that. I put that in my coffee, and it improves the taste of things like, you know, the no sugar coffee creamer, you know, the Coffee Mate stuff. I just feel like I'm drinking normal amounts, or what I used to drink coffee wise before I really committed to a weight loss program. And savor it is just not something that I do. I just can't savor it, because inside of me lives this, you know, 4 or 5 year old who just cannot, for the life of himself, delay gratification or modulate the amount of gratification that I need to get over the hump, so to speak. So if I have a little bit, I'm going to have all of it. Not a lot, all of it. And then I might go get some more, right? So savoring certain things is probably not a good idea. Now, I love regular pizza, and I will negotiate with myself. I will allow myself to eat pizza, but once a year, right? National Pizza Day. It's coming up real soon. February 9th, National Pizza Day. I will get a pizza from a normal pizzeria, and I will eat it. And I will eat it fast and angrily. But I will eat it. And then I will put that away until the following year. And I can say I've had pizza. So, other than that, I'm not a big saver type of person. I'm more likely to just skip that all together. And if you can control yourself, kudos to you. You should continue doing that. If that helps you as you develop your own spin on the WW program, whatever is helpful to you, you should do that and maybe a little bit more, right? So I will come back after part one of my conversation with Bruce has concluded. And I would like to talk a little bit about sleep and provide some information about the benefits of getting enough sleep and what getting enough sleep kind of means. And I hope you stay tuned for that. But I really hope that you enjoy listening to Bruce Lovern talk about his life and his experiences as he has moved through this whole WW weight loss thing, as they say. Please enjoy it, and I'll be back. Hey, Patrick here. We love our Saturday meeting, am I right? But hearing from one another 30 minutes a week can only do so much. We can sometimes believe that we're all alone in the trials and tribulations of this weight loss thing. This podcast seeks to challenge this belief by talking with familiar faces who will share their experiences, helpful suggestions, and insights about their journey. The good, the bad, and hopefully, the hilarious. This is about us, you and me, ordinary people working on improving our health, reducing our relationship with gravity, and most importantly, supporting one another. Welcome to Weighing In with Patrick, the Meeting After the Meeting podcast. And welcome back to the Weighing In with Patrick podcast. I am your podcast Sherpa Patrick. I am here in the home of one of my Weight Watcher Saturday meeting tribe mates. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm Bruce Lovern and my lovely wife, Johanna Lovern. Can we go to your Saturday fun weigh-ins?
How long have you been going to Weight Watchers, Bruce?
Oh, gosh, probably, I'm going to say probably 7 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. We've been off and on, but have really gone, we've started probably 3 or 4 times, I would say. We've moved a couple of times, and we've restarted, or we've stopped when we moved and then when we came back. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, to us, it's the Weight Watchers plan seems to work better than any other thing that we've really done. Mm-hmm. So we've come back to it. And so this time, I think this is the longest we've stayed in. And it's, you know, and again, we're looking at this is a lifelong commitment that we're going to go into, right? It's not a diet. It's just how we're going to have to live our life from now on. And so I think that's really made us stick to the plan, as well as you continue to say, and others are, it's the family that's in Saturday that mm-hmm. really makes a difference. I think the hearing people's good things and bad times, you know, is all part of it. And I think that's, you know, a lot of times we can empathize with that, and then we can also be happy for their doing and learn a lot. You know, the Weight Watchers group continues to provide a very similar structure that we've heard for 5-6 years, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's the knowledge, the additional knowledge that I'm gaining from the Weight Watchers. Not that I'm not learning something from them on an ongoing basis, but it's really about what, you know, living the life of it, having hearing what other people are doing, giving their ideas mm-hmm. and through. So I think that's probably the most important thing that I could do there. And, you know, I could sit in a group of people without it even being a Weight Watchers, for instance, and have a similar conversation and probably get just as much out of it. And I do like the structure that Weight Watchers puts into it. But as I said, I really get it out of the meeting people, understanding mm-hmm. who they are, and understanding what, like my dad used to say, what's your story?
What's your story?
Yep.
Yep. And that's really kind of what this is about. Where are you from? Tell us about your upbringing, or share with us some of those important things.
Yep. So I was born in Atlanta, moved here when I moved to Charlotte when I was three. Mm-hmm. I've been here ever since. Grew up in probably suburban Charlotte and feel I had a really great life at during that period of time. We played football, played baseball, did all the things, did all the American things that people mm-hmm. do. And so we had a very good childhood. You know, we would go to places we would vacation at places like Callaway Gardens, for instance, in Pine Mountain, Georgia, which Florida State University would come up and they would hold a circus. And so a literally 3-ring circus. And, in the evening they would do that. But in the mornings, you would go and you would meet with the circus performers and they would teach you how to do these things. So I've been juggling since I was six years old. Yeah. And flew on a trapeze, walked on a tightrope, 8 or 9 years old. So fearless.
How about that?
So I think that really helped in understanding, you know, you jump towards something, right? You don't shy away from it. And so I think that was kind of a part, but, you know, as I mentioned, I feel I really had a good upbringing with my dad, who was in data processing, worked in IT, at the time, and always had time, however, to be the person who would have the footballs for the teams or hold the baseballs for the teams and the bats and everything, really kind of helping the coaches out in any way that he could. Even though he couldn't be there during practices all the time because he worked a lot of hours, but he was always there to do that. And he was always there he made it a point to make it all to always there. So it was, as I said, it was a good childhood. My family is from Macon, Georgia. And so we would go down to Macon, Georgia, probably 2 or 3 times a year, mm-hmm. be with my cousins. And, you know, a typical day would be we were stuck outside running and playing like crazy. And they wouldn't let us inside. The adults would sit inside in the air conditioning while they would put
quite a punishment.
No, they would. No, true. They would put a thing of water in the thing and say, go do what you've got to do. So we would go. Go on different adventures and that type of thing. So as I said, it was a cool childhood to have. And you know, I've got a brother and a sister. I've got an older sister, older brother. So I'm the baby of the family. Mm-hmm. It was really good. And I think it was, you know, the time that during my, you know, probably my early teens and my when I was very young. Was really very good. When I got about 12 years old, my parents divorced, but I think I had a very good childhood throughout the whole time up until I was, you know, 18 to where I was, it was no longer a childhood. Right. And so, I've heard in other podcasts, you talk about, you know, did you have food issues or anything? And I really didn't. I mean, when I was young, I had, when I was playing football in the very beginning, I was a guard and a tackle. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you would literally, when you would have to go weigh in, they would strip. I mean, this was worse than Weight Watchers you've ever seen, because they would strip you down to a jock about, if you probably remember that when you were young. So, but when I turned probably 7th or 8th grade, I shot up. I got about 6 inches taller, and the weight that I had on went away because of the piece. And I probably kept that weight for a good, probably through college, because all through college I was always active. I never played like high school sports or anything, but I played. But I always did something. I always played tennis. I always
very active,
right? Mm-hmm. And so, in college, I went to. A college up in Banner Rock, North Carolina, called Lees McRae.
Okay.
So I went there for a couple of years. Again, very outdoorish type of place, skiing a lot, a lot of rock hopping, a lot of walking around, hiking, and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Not the place you go if you're looking for a lot of malls.
No.
Right?
Yeah. But you learn a lot about the outdoors. You go out and you, I had Beach Mountain in front of me. I had Sugar Mountain behind me.
Yeah.
So it was a neat couple of years, because it was only a 2-year college at the time. Mm-hmm. My last 2 years I was spent at Florida Atlantic University. So I went to Boca Raton. So I had the mountains for 2 years, the beach for 2 years. So we played sand volleyball every single day. We played softball. And so it was always a very active time.
Yeah.
Right. And then getting out of that, when I got out of college, I moved back here, continued doing sand volleyball, continued playing softball up until I was probably 27, 28 years old when I stopped doing a lot of those sports. And that's probably when more of the weight really started to go on. Through my 20s, I was probably gaining a little bit of weight, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But it was more of, as soon as I was 27, 28, 29, I slowed down a lot.
The furnace stopped functioning as it had.
Yeah, right. So that's where the weight really started to come on, and it just kind of gradually happened. And you know, there was, as everybody talks about, I'm in love with food, right? And so it's hard for me to just say I'm just going to do it for fuel. Our neighbors in our previous house, that's what they ate for fuel. They didn't eat for fun, and we never understood that. And so when we would go to their house to have dinner or something, it was very methodical, right? It was literally, this is for fuel, this is for water, this is for and us, it was very, I mean, it's an hour and a half long dinner that we would have, right? And so to us, it's a celebration, because in my family, we always did that. We had our Thanksgivings that would have 75 to 100 people show up down in Macon, Georgia, and we would have tables and tables of food, and we would talk and eat and just enjoy each other's company. And then as the years wore on, we started noticing these tables to the outside table. You had all these great dessert tables, but then there was always a new table that was created probably 10 or 15, maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And when you asked what that was, and they were saying, well, everybody's been eating these desserts and now they're diabetic. So they have to eat these desserts. So they always had the diabetic tables. So it was kind of cool that they did that. But, and that's just, again, that was who our family was. It was very, that we were always very optimistic. And it just, it, you know, as I talked to my dad before he passed away and my mother, that's what I always told them, right? Was that you gave us a life that we have enjoyed, and we have really, you know, if you're looking for something to say, did I do a bad job? They did not, right? And so I thought that was really kind of cool that they provided us with a way for, I mean, everybody has their problems. I'm not disputing that. I'm not saying my life was perfect, but they gave us an environment to thrive in, and I like that.
It sounded like you were telling me your mom and your dad instilled in you this spirit of don't be afraid to try that stuff.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to fail. And that stays with you.
Yeah, sure does. Yeah. I mean, the to the point of even when I was very young, on like a small farm team for playing baseball, they needed a pitcher in the senior group. And my dad kind of pushed me to say, you can do this.
Right.
You're a left-hander. They don't know what left-handers do. Yeah. Right. And so that was the kind of cool stuff that he did that really kind of pushed me into the thing to say, and I can do this. Right.
Right.
It's interesting. My brother and sister both have a very similar mentality as it goes through. And I certainly see that from my mom and dad, that they deliver that to us.
Did he volunteer at places around town? Did you see that?
Yeah. And he would bring us with him at times, right?
Yeah.
But he was, for lack of a better term, he was a bigwig at Bank of America, and it wasn't Bank of America at the time; it was called NCMB. So he did a lot of functions that were similar to that. He had a lot of compassion for hiring people with disabilities, and so there was a lot of volunteering that he did that he brought us with him to kind of see that as well. And so it was, again, I found that really neat that he wanted to take work and really use work, right. For good. Right.
Right.
And so I really liked that. And I've done that in some cases in my own job as well. But, he volunteered, he really kind of put some pieces into it. And, you know, it was, as I said, it was a good upbringing, and it was I really liked where we were.
He sounds like the type of individual that he could talk to you all day long while he was in the boardroom, but he could also have a great conversation with the janitor.
Yeah, I agree.
That type of individual.
Yeah, as I said, his favorite line was "What's your story?" Right. Yeah. So every time he would come to see it, so he moved to New Zealand. He lived in Puerto Rico. He ran operations for a difference after he left the NCMB. He ran operation centers for banks in Puerto Rico, and then he went to New Zealand. He was in New Zealand for a few years. So every time he would come in town, that was his byline, right?
Yeah.
He wanted to hear about our story. He wanted to hear about what he's missed,
right?
Right, and so it was kind of neat that he was away, but he brought us up to be very independent.
Yeah.
And to be able to take care of ourselves. And, you know, the thing that he always would say to Johanna and myself is that I help these people, right? Like your sister or something. I help them. I'm most proudest because I don't have to help you, right? Because you've shown your independence and you've been able to do that. So I those kind of things that I think he put on us, but he also acknowledged it as he went through. So I thought that was kind of cool too.
And it also sounds like if he needed to, he would still help.
Oh, absolutely.
He wouldn't just throw you to the wolves and say, learn.
And he did multiple times when I was, so when I was in, as Johanna continues to say, before she first met me, if I had a nickel, I spent it no matter where it was, I would burn a hole in my pocket.
Right.
And so he would help me out during periods of that time. But, I think it was the love of my life, Johanna, who taught me more about who's the planner of the family, by the way.
I've got one of those too. I have a Johanna as well. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Who taught me all about the right finances and no, you don't put all of your bills in a bowl and start pulling them out to pay the bills when they're done. So that was a big deal. That helped a lot too.
What do you remember about the city of Charlotte that is really not a thing anymore?
So we used to go to the parades downtown, and this was in late 60s, maybe early 70s, and the windows even opened up, and you could hang out the window of a 15-story building, which, by the way, probably 15 or 20 stories was about as tall as they got, and see and watch this, right? There was Charlotte was a completely different city when I was growing up, and it was – you know, we felt that where we lived, which is near Wendover and Providence Road, when we would go to the country, well, the country is Matthews now.
Yeah.
And so to us, I mean, literally even going like to Park Road or to go into South Park area, that was a long way out.
Right.
In reality, I used to ride my bike there as we would do it. So you would never think of riding your bike to South Park now from Providence Road, or you would never even think of getting on with all the cars there. But it was simple, and it was a nice area to do that in. So I think that was the thing that I saw too, was that it was very, maybe it was the way we were growing up, but you didn't lock your doors. You didn't. And so it was very safe.
Yeah.
And that's changed, but that's only changed because life happens, right? Things grow, and we probably tripled our population in Charlotte. But you know, that I think that was one thing that I remember, the ability to, as I said, just get up and go and drive somewhere and be able to get there in a fast enough time, was another piece that you don't see in Charlotte anymore either. It's just, there's just a lot of traffic.
Yeah. What did you study in college?
I studied marketing, but ended up being more in MIS. Mm-hmm. So my dad always placed me in places where, because since he was in IT, he didn't want to push me into IT, but he wanted me to get close enough to it to where I thought, hey, maybe this is a good idea.
Right.
So when I went to, I just got a business administration at Lees McRae, but when I went to Boca Raton in Florida Atlantic, I also was doing a business degree, but in working in the library, my next door suite mates and my roommate all worked for the computing center, and they said, you ought to come to work here because all you got to do is sign people in, and then you can do all your homework. So as I was doing my homework, I got that job. As I was doing my homework and through with my homework, I started reaching in and grabbing the books that were there and started reading those books because I got bored. And so I started learning more and more about the computer or how to write code and how to support things and that type of thing. So I started consulting with people as they went through and thought, this is kind of a cool job. This is a cool idea. And literally that's what spurred my career. It just, when I got out of college, I went, started working at a place that probably doesn't exist anymore called Computerland. And then worked at, 9X Business Center, started to sell computers and went from there. I just really loved the support and working in computers, and I've been doing it now for, almost 30 years.
And sounds like you like it.
Do. Still passionate about it. Still very passionate about it.
If you had to point to one thing about your career and say, this is the thing that still holds my attention, what is it?
Yeah, it's the delivering quality of products. So, interestingly enough, for the last 20 years, I've been testing. So I'm the quality assurance director at a company. And so testing to me and making sure that we're delivering things properly and on time to our customer has been just a passion of mine for years. And so I really pushed that to everyone.
Yeah. Was it painful watching me set up then?
No. Wasn't
painful at all. So you get out of school, you move back here to the area.
Yeah.
After a little while, the activity starts to slow down. What was going on that you think the activity slowed down?
Well, it was more of, as I said, I was becoming 27, 28. Softball wasn't really something that I wanted to continue to drive every day. I had other things that became more interesting.
Yeah.
Tearing my ACL didn't help when I was, when I did that, but I still played after that, by the way. But, the sand volleyball was still something that was still kind of fun, but it just didn't happen every day like it used to. And you got other interest, right? And so the activities went down, but the fuel that I was putting in my body did not.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was probably, I'm sure that was the biggest part.
So it didn't adjust your eating.
It did.
Yeah. Okay. No, that makes sense. Yeah. I know some, especially athletes, right?
Yeah.
That seems to happen to a lot of athletes. When did you notice, oh man, now I think I might have a problem here.
Yeah, well, it was more about I was unable to do the things that I had done in the past. And I get you're getting old and stuff like that. But to me, old wasn't 27, old wasn't 30, old wasn't 35. And so I've always been someone to push more than I should. And so it just never made sense to me. So going to gyms and things like that were a thing that I did, but it was only, it seemed to be only more of a short period of time, if you will, that I did that in. And then I would quit doing it.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily know why at this point, but it was either, as I said, I have short attention span, but so perhaps that was a part of it. I don't know that I thought, this isn't working, so I'm just going to do that. Because interestingly enough, as with the piece with the program that we do at WW, it works. Mm-hmm. You just have to apply yourself to it, right? And so, I think the idea that as I was getting 27, 28, 29, I didn't understand that how come I'm unable to do the things that I've done in the past.
Yeah.
And, but again, didn't stop me. The eating didn't stop. I had just met Johanna at 27, 28. And so we would go out to eat, we would do those types of things. And so that was, I'm sure that was part of it, but it certainly wasn't the biggest part because I would go out with all of my friends and continue to do what I did. And it was probably, I would say, as we were getting married and when I was 33, we started, there was more talking of, you know, we smoked, by the way, I smoked since I was 14. We needed to figure out a way to get better, to get healthier. Right. And then quitting smoking always tends to gravitate towards eating. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's always something that you want to, some anxiety that you're letting go, but you're adding something back in.
Right.
And so food again was a part of it. So when I quit smoking, that was a big part of it. But interestingly enough, I didn't really fully quit smoking till I was in my 40s. And I think it was to at that point, I just got so fed up. I was like, I can't do this anymore.
With the smoking, was it, you know, you just cut way down or you'd go?
No, I'd go cold turkey, right? Yeah. I would go, well, I would use things, but I mean, I would stop. I would literally stop. Yeah, I'd go for a couple of months. Yeah. My thing was, and I couldn't have one cigarette after that because the minute I had one, I'd have
it.
A pack,
that's
I'd
how
have
it
a carton. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so I was, it would always happen that way. I would say, I'm just going to have one.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I know, I'm smoking again. And, and you know, there was a time even when I quit smoking. I started smoking cigars, or I'd been smoking cigars, but started inhaling cigars.
Oh,
right?
Boy. Yeah.
And so Johanna's like, go back to smoking cigarettes because you're going to die smoking that. So I was thankfully that was only a short lived piece of it.
Yeah.
But, as I said, it wasn't until I was early 40 that it finally just hit me of like, you can't continue to do this.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad now because as I see other people that are smoking, to me, it's just, I'm so glad that I stopped.
Yeah.
And I don't feel bad. I mean, I don't necessarily feel bad for the person or I don't feel angry for the person like some ex-smokers do. I just am glad that I don't do it.
Yeah. So what, if anything, did your experience of finally being able to quit or the many efforts or attempts at quitting cigarettes, did that inform your weight loss journey at all?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as I quit smoking, my weight went up. And so even if I tried to lose weight, it would always go down, but not down completely, right?
Yeah,
so
sure.
you always raise and raise and raise as you went through. So I think that was another part of as I continued to gain weight. It wasn't that I was, I never got to a point to where I could lose it and keep it lost. Even when I was in Weight Watchers, up until now, I always, and I still do this. I mean, goodness gracious, I'll fluctuate, but I've kept 20, 25 pounds off and never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I still have a long way to go. But I'm okay with that. I think the idea is that I've got the knowledge and I understand where I'm going. So that's kind of the way I see it.
Rick, when I talked to him, I asked him some question about, would you ever consider not doing Weight Watchers, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And his response to me was, where else am I going to go?
Right. Yeah.
What else am I going to do?
Yeah. I've heard multiple people say that in our session, and they're so right. I mean, all you're going to do is, so if you stop, you're going to,
what's the alternative?
Yeah. You're just going to get heavier. And so I've been really fortunate that my company believes in health.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually pay for the Weight Watchers.
That's great.
They've been doing it for the last 2 years. And, I love that. Right.
Yeah.
They pay for mine and my wife's, hadn't stopped me from still wanting to go deeper in things.
Sure.
It actually just affirms my commitment to this company,
and
to be able to say, well, gosh, they're a belief in my health is important. I understand why they're doing it, right? Because they won't have to pay for health pieces later on, because that hopefully as I lose the weight, then I won't be as I'll be more healthy. But it's a good way, and I wish more companies would do things like that.
So you mentioned that your lovely wife, your better half, is also a WW member.
She is.
And that, if I heard you right, you met when you were about 27, 28.
We did.
And has it always been a collaborative effort at addressing weight-related stuff?
Yes, we've always had each other's backs. And, you know, from the beginning that we were, when we first met, my next door neighbor, I met my next door neighbor when they moved in. They came in from New York.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out my next door neighbor's wife was Johanna's partner at the same company that she also moved down. And so when they introduced us, we weren't really keen on each other. It wasn't really, it was a very Harry met Sally kind of a thing. But once we became best friends, we've had each other's backs ever since. And so I think that collective has really made a difference, right? And so we push each other and we know when to not push, right?
Yeah.
And so I think I wish there were more couples that would come to the WW because it, you know, when I hear of people saying that, you know, my husband doesn't give a crap. He's just, you know, he eats and he says, you know, this, it just, it kind of upsets me to a point of saying, why wouldn't they want to have a partner who, or why wouldn't that partner want to believe in them, right? And I don't know people's life story, so I'm not going to kind of deep into that, but Johanna and I are committed to that, right? We're, we continue to say we want to grow old together. And so we've been doing that now for, gosh, almost 30 years then now. And so that's important to us that we do have each other's back.
Yeah. Grow old together without the added assistance from the hired nursing people, right?
You know, you're right.
That if we can avoid health problems that are solely created by the choices we're making right now, that would be a good
idea. Yeah, I agree. And you know, we talk about, you know, what we want to do in the next 10 years, what we want to do in the next 20 years. As I said, she's the planner, so it makes sense to put that out there and really start to think about what that means. And part of that means, well, if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to go to Europe, if I'm going to walk across things, if I'm going to look across all the U.S., right, I'm going to need to be able to walk. And so I need to lose weight in order to do that. I think they say every 5 pounds of weight you lose is 30 or 40 pounds off your knees on an ongoing basis. Sure. So, and the stamina was much better. I mean, I'm able to, you know, thankfully my Apple Watch continues to tell me how either good or bad my health is, but it does say that I'm able to recover faster than I have in the past. And it kind of shows a good trend. And I'm certain that part of it is being able to not only lose weight, but keep the weight off. And, and when I exercise and I get winded, I can gain that. I can get that wind back faster than I could in the past.
When you were talking about when you try to stop smoking, you kind of turn to food as the go-between, right? The bridge.
Yeah, that's right.
What were your go-to bridge foods, so to speak?
Well, and they still are. I mean, pizza, it's chicken wings. So I grill a lot. So
Fun stuff.
Yeah, I've been grilling for, gosh, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so I would always do ribs. I would cook steaks. I would do, you know, all types of brisket, right? Mm-hmm. And that type of thing, barbecue. So that I would go deeper into that right now. What's interesting is that now I can still cook a large brisket. The minute I take it off and it's ready to eat, I cut it in half and put it in the freezer.
Right.
Where I didn't do that in the past, right? It's not that I would eat it in one sitting, but you would have it in the fridge and then you would just eat from it ongoing. I remove that and I remove that idea from myself now by doing that. So I thought those are the kind of things that really have helped me in understanding that I can still have whatever the heck I want in moderation. You just can't go overboard. And there'll be times when perhaps I do go overboard, but you know, we go to one of our favorite chicken wing places, still go there. Mm-hmm. But I don't have 15 or 20 chicken wings. I have 7,
right.
You know, and that's all I really can take. Right?
I can't even relate to that. Sorry. I can't even relate to that. If I have 7, I'm going to have, I'm going for probably 2 dozen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Your mine and your approach is definitely different. Yeah. And I can appreciate where you're coming from on, because I have an affinity for peanut M&Ms, and I can't stop eating them.
Oh, me too. I'm the same way.
I was just telling Johanna, this may be one of those foods that I may have to set aside and just say, I can't, because I buy them in the small bags, and I'll eat 4 of the small bags, right? So it doesn't really matter how you package them. I'm still going to eat a ton of them.
Right.
So, you know, But more importantly, as I said, I find moderation. Now, it is taking me a lot longer to lose the weight.
Okay.
But as I said, I'm doing this for life. So I'm not changing anything. So I feel good about that. I still want to enjoy the things that make me happy. And food still makes me happy.
Sure.
But just, again, in moderation.
Yeah, it's not the only thing that makes you happy.
That's right. There's a lot of other things that make me happy as well.
This most recent engagement with WW has lasted how long? When did you start back?
When we got here. So we've been here since probably 4 years. So probably 2021 is when we came in.
Okay.
And started. We came from the company I work for is their headquarters is in Salisbury. So it's called ADUSA. Mm-hmm. We are a kind of like, well, it's a distribution company, but they service grocery stores like Food Lion. Mm-hmm. And so we own Food Lion, we own Hannaford, we own Stop and Shop, and we own Giant. And then obviously in Europe, there's a ton of other grocery stores that we own. But
right.
The Food Lion main office is in Salisbury, so that's where we were. But so we were there all the way up until when COVID started happening, mm-hmm. right? And then you couldn't go in during COVID. So then once COVID started back, I mean, we still started here during COVID, but I'm not a video guy. That's not going to have the video is not going to help me. Right.
Gotta
I need to be
human,
there. That's right.
Human interaction.
And even if it's accountability, right. Yeah. I mean, you know, just to me sitting on the scales, right. I can set up my scales at home, but sure. when I go there, it makes a difference, I yeah. think. And so I think that, I know I like the way that they set it up. And so that, as I said, so, it was about 2001 when we joined, mm-hmm. when we came back in.
What brought you in then?
The same thing that brought us in the other three times, right? Which was, hey, we believe every time we leave every time we leave WW, we got it.
We got it.
Mm-hmm. No worries, right?
We know the code.
Understand. And so I don't know why we need to keep paying the money, right?
Right.
Well, there's a good reason why you should pay the money. Mm-hmm. And the answer is that it's honestly the people that, yeah. that are make a difference. And so I like that, right? Johanna likes it as well. And so we mm-hmm. wanted to make sure that we went back. And this time, as we started hearing the Saturday morning crowd started talking more and more about, this is how I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. That
right.
appealed to me. And so I thought that was something that I wanted to move towards as well. And so that,
yeah.
that kind of got me going to understand again. I felt I still do feel mm-hmm. I have the knowledge. I know when I shouldn't be doing something,
mm-hmm.
but I also know that I have the ability to do that as long as I don't continue doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard people say they do something on Friday and then they wake up and say, well, I'm going to go ahead and blow the weekend, so I'm going to start back on Monday. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Right. So I need to try to get back in the saddle as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. or else it could go downhill quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The people, right.
Just, yeah.
Being around, we were, before we hit record here, I was telling you how, you know, when I get interested in something, I've got to just immerse myself in as much as possible in that topic.
Right.
And so I think I've always been one of those easily influenced, we'll say. Being around certain folk, I will eventually pick up maybe their habits. I'll start doing things the way they're doing them.
Mm-hmm. You emulate them.
Yeah.
Right.
So like when I was a kid, I grew up playing ice hockey, and I was fortunate enough one summer to spend a week or 10 days in Toronto at a goaltender's camp. There was nothing but Canadian kids there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, I kept saying, hey, I was just there for a week,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I'm the type of person that if I'm around people that are wheeling and dealing and, you know, eating everything in sight, that's all I'm probably going to see. And eventually I'm going to make it okay for me to do that too.
Yeah.
You know? So you returned in 2021 when the studios reopened.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a memory of what you were thinking that first step back into a studio after your?
Well, I found it interesting that I weighed the exact to the pound that I weighed in the last time I joined.
Interesting.
So it was almost like that was there was a trigger in my head that
yeah.
said, okay, that's too much. But I also noticed that. You talk about, you know, I talk about emulating people. The thing mm-hmm. that really drew me again into this Rock Hill group was there was a lot of people who had said, while I do agree with that, I do believe in emulating people, and I needed for it to be me. And so mm-hmm. I needed for me to influence myself in
yeah,
some parts
sure.
to say, I can no longer do that, or I
yeah.
can, and feel good about that. Right.
Right.
And no matter what other people thought about you, it was immaterial.
Yeah.
And so I always have had that same kind of concept of you want everybody to like you and all that kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff, right? But this gave me a little bit more inflection for my weight to be able
mm-hmm.
to say, hey, this is my This is my life we're talking about here. We're not talking about yours. We're talking about mine. And so, no, I don't want to have the fifth or sixth drink that you're having. No, I don't want to have the 11th chicken wing, right? I'm good. I'm really good. And so that's helped me, I think.
Have you had to have a come to Jesus moment with anybody that wants you to overdo it, anything like that?
I haven't. I've but I'm pretty direct with people, so I think they don't need to come to Jesus because I say, hey, I'm done, right? I don't need to. I appreciate your so I guess in a sense maybe I have because I've said I appreciate you wanting me to continue and you can continue, but I'm not.
So it sounds like when you present it that first time, you don't really leave much room for doubt as to what your preference is.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Do you have any secret sauce for somebody who may struggle in being clear?
Well, so as I said, I'm a pretty direct person, and I think it's okay for you to say, I need to look out for me, right? Mm-hmm. This is about my life. This is about my career.
Right.
This is how I do things properly, right? So I just would say be straightforward with people and just be able to, you know, if they're unwilling to accept that, right, which I would find hard to believe, then you maybe don't need them as a friend.
Yeah.
So, I have a lot of people who will go up at local. There's a local barbecue place right up here. And when we would, with the golfing group, would go there every Thursday. So everybody would eat, everybody would drink. I may have one or two drinks, and that's all I'm doing. So nobody's really forcing me to do anything. But if they were, I would say to somebody who has a problem with that, just as I said, be honest, or politely say no, right? And then either walk away from the situation because if you're uncomfortable. You need to walk away from situations you're uncomfortable with.
What has been the biggest struggle in your efforts to lose weight?
So I think there seems to be something that goes off in my head once I start to lose around 25, 30 pounds. I haven't got to 30 pounds yet, but once I lose 25, 27, something goes off my head saying, hey, good job, you can take a break, and I do it. And so I need to push myself. Johanna and I talk about this, I talk about like the decades. So to me, it's the 70s or it's the 60s or it's the 50s, right? Mm-hmm. As I'm trying to go to. So to me, it's just trying to get through that particular, decade, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I'm so close to it and then something triggers off in my head that says, hey, you've done a great job, take a break. And you know, that to me is where I need to remember things like that, right? Mm-hmm. I've heard your wife say, you know, that's a moment, right? That's a weight loss moment. Mm-hmm. May not be right now, but it will be in the future. And so those are the kind of things that I really look at as well.
Yeah.
Of saying, would cheese fries really be good? Yeah, they really would be. Mm-hmm. But maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe this is the time that I decide I want to get to the next decade. I want to get to the lower to the lower teens or whatever, right? Yeah. So, so those are the kind of things that I'm working on as we speak, right? Mm-hmm. Literally now, because I'm close to one of those. I'm close to one of those times, and so I want to make sure that while I'm eating what I still feel good about, I do things like take lunch into work instead of going out to eat.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to help extremely well, right? Because you know exactly what you're putting in your mouth.
Right.
You don't have to worry about every time you go somewhere, you're going to have a sandwich, right? And that sandwich is probably not going to be so great for you, even though it may just be turkey, but everything around the turkey is not really the best thing for you. So to me, I think that's been a big difference maker. And and as I said, my partner Johanna has always kind of pushed in that manner of saying, hey, how about you take lunch?
Right.
How about, because I go 3 days a week now, and she said, hey, try taking lunch once a week. And then I'm sure in the future she'll say, why don't you consider twice a week, right? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just who she is, right? And so she's trying to make my decisions easier, because there could be times when we go out and somebody says, hey, let's go have Greek food, or not the turkey sandwich I was expecting, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's part of life. And so she's trying to say, if I take my own lunch, then my decision's made, yeah. right? And so that kind of helps me in the planning part of it.
Are you the type of individual that thrives off of repetition or variety?
So in the morning, I'm repetition. So I eat the same thing probably, or the same point value, should I say,
yeah.
every single day. It's yeah. about a 7 or 8 point breakfast. Lunch can be different, mm-hmm. right? But dinner, turns out dinner becomes a lot less, a lot more repetition.
Yeah.
Because the planner has mm-hmm. our, we already know what we're having for the rest of the, for the rest of the week, right? Yeah, she's already right. said this, we're going to have this for dinner.
Great.
So that helps me in understanding, for instance, mm-hmm. if I do go out to go out to lunch, that I can go, hey, this might be one of those times that I can splurge a little bit because I know I'm having either shrimp or fish or something like that,
right.
For dinner, or we have Meatless Monday, right? So right. we do that as well. So that helps me in understanding how I plan for the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm. If you could go back 8 years, talk to the person you were then about, this is one of those times you might want to think about doing this differently or thinking about this in a different way. Can you think of anything that might come to mind during that yeah, time?
So a couple of times we had joined the Planet Fitness, and mm-hmm. I was doing it, but mm-hmm. only doing it just to do it, not to do it to really make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. And so if there was some conversation that I would have with myself back then, it would have been, learn a little bit more about what you're truly trying to do, because mm-hmm. just walking on a treadmill for yeah. 15 minutes doesn't always solve your problem.
Right.
Go in this cute little thing that they have that's a 10-minute session that you can go circuit training yeah. and do that.
Mm-hmm. Where the light goes off.
It's a cool idea if you know what you're doing.
Right.
Don't seek out someone and try to help mm-hmm. and try to help you get a better understanding as to tell them, I'm looking to do this, right? Right. So then they may say, well, then don't do that, mm-hmm. right? I'm not necessarily sure at the time, and this is from sure. sure this changed, but at the time, that Planet Fitness was the best place for me to get the fitness person who could tell yeah. me that. But I think they certainly had enough education to be mm-hmm. able to say, yeah, walking on the treadmill is probably not the smartest thing.
Yeah.
So I go back to my old football days or my old days when I was, you know, I'd walk the stairs, right? You do the stair a treadmill, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would do that as well. And it was like, what are you doing, right? Yeah. It just kills you to do that. So my legs are fine, mm-hmm. but the stomach above it didn't help yeah. in anything. So I yeah. think that's probably a big part of what I would really look for. And, you know, we talk a lot about grace, right, mm-hmm. lately, right? And so, well, since we've been in this last session the last 4 years, I think I would do that as well. I think I would say, you know, it's going to be okay, right? Patrick, you say a lot of times it says, hey, if you can do something better than you did today, then mm-hmm. that's great. It doesn't have to be 100% better. It can be 10% better.
One hundred millionth of a percent better today than yesterday. So, you're on the right
yes,
track.
So but. I think convincing myself that it really was me, mm-hmm. right? That would probably be the other thing, because I wouldn't believe myself. But the other piece would be is to say, give yourself a little grace in some of this and make sure that mm-hmm. you're doing this for the right reasons, right? Because, mm-hmm. again, it almost seemed like I was checking a box and I wasn't really, I mean, so I would go in and I would work out, but I wasn't really seeing any results from it. Mm-hmm. And so that's made me not want to go, right? And so that was part of it as well.
I've been thinking a lot recently about what was it that I kept doing the yo-yo thing. Right. Because I totally identify with what you were saying about I get to this certain point and I'd be like, good job. Mm-hmm. Now, all right. Mm-hmm. Let's go out, you know. And I think for me, for what it's worth, I just wouldn't compromise on what I needed to do to A, lose weight, but really not gain weight.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I just couldn't come to an agreement with the proposition that I might have to change something or I might have to stay away from something, you know?
Yeah.
Get obsessive about certain food flavors, things like that. And I thought because I was obsessed now, I will always be obsessed. And so therefore I should never try to not eat as much of it or just not eat it, you know? Does that make any sense to
you? It does. And as you're saying that, you know, I things come to mind of areas that I could say, you know, he's right. Cause parts of me want to say, I don't want to change this kind of lifestyle, but okay. If you don't want to change this lifestyle, you're going to stay at this weight.
Yeah, what am I agreeing to?
That's right.
What am I agreeing to?
So you got to come to the conclusion that if that's the case, then I have to be okay with that. And honestly, I'm not okay with that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I want to make that change. It's just, you know, as I said, it's got to be myself. Just as I talked about when I quit smoking, right? I tried smoking.
No magic pixie dust.
No. You got to want to do it, and you've got to want to make the difference. And until that time comes, I probably will stay this same weight as we move on. Right. My goal is to, you know, I want to lose in increments. I don't want to lose. I don't want to go for a goal that says I got to be this weight. Right. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, because I don't know what that weight looks like, but I know it doesn't look like this.
Yeah.
And that to me is the most important part.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I get that. Yep. You know, I tried to, Courtney and I had a conversation recently, and we were talking about differences between, you know, some folks who didn't have a weight problem when they were growing up versus other folks that did, right? And the folks that didn't necessarily have a weight problem, they can kind of visualize in their head what it looks like to be at a healthy weight.
Right.
Right. Or more to the point, what it feels like.
Yeah.
Right. And so I remember when I finally got into a size 34, I was like, I just remember just being, I just didn't even know what to say. I was like, because I had no memory
of
getting into a pair of pants that were a size 34.
Right.
You know what I mean? For me moving forward, I now understand what I am agreeing to if I start going down that path. Mm-hmm. And that idea of, and I think it's whether it's, you know, substance abuse, food problems, whatever. If you don't have that moment, that it's like there's like this clarity thing that happens.
Right.
All of it's like somebody opens up this window and you stick your head out and you're like, oh, this is what the fresh air feels like.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I get it now. And in at some point, things just turn on and they make sense. And that's not to say there's magic pixie dust. That is an accumulation, I believe, of all of your previous experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you made an effort and fell a little short, or every time you started to make an effort and didn't follow through on it and it stopped as quickly as it started, like all of that stuff is fodder for how do I maintain this?
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, just having that idea of like if you go to an AA meeting, you can probably tell the lifetimers.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And they will let you know the moment I step away from these meetings, the moment I disengage from this process, that's when I go downhill.
Yep.
And for me, I had to come to that realization of if I stop doing this, I am agreeing to a shortened life.
Yep. Yep. You're right.
And that short life is going to be mired in one ailment, ache, hospital stay. I'll be that guy that he only has the fact someone just touched his lawn. I'm going to be that guy. Get out my lawn. That's all I will have, you know? And I don't want that.
Yeah. You know? So, and, you know, the way I see it too, is that I want to do this in chunks, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to, I love the idea of setting a big goal, right? But as I said before, I want to do it in 10-pound chunks, and I want to be able to say, how do you feel now?
Mm-hmm.
And I already know, I got 30, 40 more chunks of this to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that if I get to where I am now, I don't like where I am now, so I need to move further. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not doing that, then I need to change my message, right? Mm-hmm. So I, or change the options that I work at. Mm-hmm. That, and that's just something that I have internal in my head that I have to do. So how I go about that, mm-hmm. it just means I have to do something different than I did the last 10 pounds ago. Mm-hmm. So I've left something behind 10 pounds ago. Mm-hmm. What do I need to leave behind, or what do I need to do better at in this 10 pounds? Mm-hmm. And to me, that's at least the way that I found that I've at least kept it off, right?
Right.
So again, not disputing that I still need to, I need to push it over, but that's at least the way I work. Johanna works differently, right? Mm-hmm. But again, how we do it, how we do the plan mm-hmm. is immaterial when of the connection. It's immaterial. I mean, it's material to us, but mm-hmm. it's immaterial as a couple, as long as we're connected to each other and make right. sure that we have each other's back.
Right. Well, I mean, that idea of chunks, there, you can find the research that's out there that folks that chunk it, that they have a period of weight loss, and then they go into a period of maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And for as long as they were in that period of weight loss, and as they do that, their long-term outcomes are incredible. If you're able to spend time in that maintenance mindset,
yep.
right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And honestly, it's good to hear, because that's that is my plan. I just have a lot of jumps or chunks, should I say, to go. Again, but I'm okay with that.
It's a long game.
I get it's a long game. That's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, it's a long game.
I got plenty. I mean, I'm in my early 60s. I got plenty of time.
Right. And if you weren't doing WW for the last 4 years,
that's right.
Where would you be now?
Right.
Right. And so that sounds like that's part of your thinking as
well. Yeah, I would be where I sit, where I've seen some friends of mine still today that I question whether they're going to see mid 60s.
Yeah. Hard to watch sometimes.
It's very hard to watch. Yeah.
That was part one of my conversation with Bruce Lovern. Probably spoke for a total of about 2 hours, and it was really interesting listening to Bruce's story. And we should probably have part two coming up Friday or Saturday. That will be followed by a conversation that I had with Johanna Lovern, is the partner of Bruce. That too was very interesting, and a completely different perspective on a lot of topics. And I'm looking forward to that. You know, this week's technique is sleep. Sleep is something that, as a human being, you have to have. Sleep is beneficial to rest in your body, helping your body regenerate, especially if you're exercising. That is when your muscles are growing. But sleep is also important for your brain. It's crucial that when you are trying to lose weight and when you are trying to maintain weight, that you are keeping in mind that getting enough rest, quality rest, that is, that's going to be something you're going to need to take advantage of and allow it to help you. When they, specialists, experts, talk about the benefits of sleep on your brain, you know, we're not just talking about just like mental health, right? We're also talking about cognitive function, your ability to make decisions, your ability to think clearly, your ability to just function at a good level during the day, organize things. It's going to assist you in being able to think through challenging situations, I would assume, right? And we're coming up on a season of the year where, especially when it comes to food, we're probably more challenged by this particular season than any other. Just today at work, somebody dropped off a catered lunch. Who was it catered by? The lovely folks at Chick-fil-A. So we had to do our best to make a positive decision, right? The best decision. But let's talk a little bit about the positive impacts of what we'll call sufficient sleep, right? And sufficient sleep is probably about 7.5 hours a night. That seems to be what science indicates would be, shall we say, optimal. But usually anywhere between 7 and 9 hours. You know, they're still researching sleep and its benefits. When you don't get enough sleep, how does it negatively impact you? Regarding like cognitive function, Nature and Science of Sleep, a peer-reviewed journal, indicated that adequate sleep enhances attention, problem-solving skills, and memory consolidation. Another article indicated that good sleep allows the brain to process information, and it strengthens those neural connections, which are vital for learning. It impacts our mental health. Sleep Medicine Reviews, another peer-reviewed journal in 2020, found that there is a strong correlation, not a causation, but a strong correlation. In other words, there's a connection. They're not necessarily sure what the connection is between sufficient sleep and lower rates of anxiety and depression. Now, let's think about that for a second. Are you more or less likely to eat things that for one's goal of losing weight may not be helpful when you are anxious or depressed? And so it seems to me that it would be in your best interest to do whatever you can to decrease the likelihood of depression or anxiety, creating problems for you. Quality sleep also helps regulate mood and emotional responses. It promotes resilience against stress. It kind of like, you know, weight loss isn't going to solve all your problems, but it will possibly, we've heard it in the meeting, right? That people say, you know, my doctor told me that if I didn't lose weight, I may not have come through this particular health crisis that I experienced, right? Again, they don't know what the connection is, but they think there is one. Diet and weight management, the peer-reviewed journal Obesity in 2022 found that individuals who sleep 7 to 9 hours per night are more likely to make healthier food choices and maintain a balanced diet compared to those who sleep less than that. Adequate sleep also supports hormone balance, regulating certain hormones that impact hunger, like leptin, and then there's another one that I simply can't pronounce. Garlin? I don't know. But let's talk a little bit more about sleep, exercise, and weight management. Sports Medicine, another peer-reviewed journal, found that good sleep is essential for optimal athletic performance. Now, please note that they are not necessarily telling you that you have to be a pro athlete, that you have to be, you know, that you have to have an agent, basically. But they're talking about optimal athletic performance for you, whatever that means for you. It helps in recovery, as we were saying earlier, right? And muscle repair. And muscle repair is how muscles grow. And athletes who prioritize sleep tend to have better endurance. They tend to have more strength. They tend to have better overall fitness levels than those who don't. Weight loss efforts are impacted by sleep. That the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and this is a somewhat of a recent study, 2023, they concluded that individuals who sleep less than 6 hours per night are less successful in weight loss programs, that they lose significantly less weight than those who achieve 7 and 9 hours of sleep. Put that all together, you know, sufficient sleep is not just a luxury item. It's necessary for your cognitive functions, your mental health, your mental acuity, weight loss and weight loss efforts and weight management. It is central, right? It's one of the pillars of Weight Watchers. The other side of that coin regarding insufficient sleep is that it's going to cause you to be mentally sluggish. It is going to kind of fan the flames of cognitive deficits. You're going to have an increased risk of mental health issues, going back to that idea of anxiety and depression being more prevalent amongst people that don't sleep very well. You know, it's never just one thing, right? Your weight loss program isn't just merely about food. Maintaining a healthy weight isn't just about food. It's not just about exercise, right? Just because you eat a bunch of crap, don't paint yourself into a corner and say, well, I'll just exercise more to work it off. That's probably not going to be a helpful strategy. Once you lose that sleep, it's gone, right? You don't make up for lost sleep. You might sleep more, but remember, optimal sleep is 7 to 9 hours. So if you get 3 hours of sleep last night and you decide to make up for it and sleep 12 hours tomorrow, it's like overfilling your tank, you know, your gas tank in a way. There's only so much you can put in there. The more you can maintain a routine and get to bed at an hour that allows you to get that good rest in, that's 7 to 9 hours or 7.5 hours at least, the better off you're going to be. The more likely you are to see those positive efforts at sleeping show up on the scale, show up in your moods, show up in your food choices. You're going to be less cranky, probably. You're going to be less forgetful. You're not going to be as depressed as people that aren't sleeping, right? Or anxious. When we are depressed or anxious, we're going to reach for stuff that is going to help us gain weight, not lose it. We're probably going to be more likely to make decisions because our decision making is going to be a little bit behind. That may eventually lead to some of those unhelpful behaviors, right? So just something to keep in mind. You know, sleep is not to be taken lightly. And it doesn't seem to me to matter whether or not you go to bed at 8 p.m. or 11:30. If you can get those 7.5 hours in, fantastic. And pay attention to your sleep patterns. Just because those seem to be the optimal hours, always remember that, you know, there are those metahumans out there in the world that, you know what? If I can get 2 hours of sleep in, I'm ready to go. I mean, I've heard some anecdotal information of folks who worked 2 full-time jobs and they couldn't really get 7.5 hours of sleep every night or 8 hours of sleep every night. Some of the stories I heard was, boy, if they could just get 2 hours of sleep in or 4 hours of sleep, they would wake up without the assistance of somebody else shaking them awake or without an alarm clock. Their body just told them to wake up, right? So whatever works for you, listen to what your body is telling you. That is important. Everybody's different. If you only need a certain amount, just make sure you try and get that certain amount. And once it's gone though. You're starting fresh the next day. Try to get it in. Okay. Like I said earlier, part two of my conversation with Bruce will be out at its usual time, Friday night, Saturday morning, somewhere in there, followed by this episode 9 with Johanna. And that was a great conversation as well. If you would like to be a contestant here on the Weighing In with Patrick podcast, I know I would love to have you here. I would love to talk to you. I'd love to listen to what your story has been. Wherever you are in the process, if you've only been attending Weight Watchers for 2 weeks, or if you are a long-time Weight Watchers proponent, but you're starting back up for perhaps like I have started 5 or 6 times over the years. If you're like me and on your 5th or 6th, you are still incredibly welcome to come and speak because we have all been there, and it's important for people who may be doing this for the first time to hear that, hey, you know what? It's a process. People are figuring it out, but people do keep coming back, right? This program is just a program. It's just words out in the ether, and it is all potential energy until you put it to work for you. And just because you didn't do so hot yesterday doesn't mean you can't bounce back today. Ask yourself what happened yesterday that maybe led to certain decisions you weren't feeling too great about, that led to some behaviors that you didn't feel too great about. But resist the urge to take those negative feelings about whatever happened and lock them inside and say, well, I just won't deal with them. Examine them. Don't let them fester and grow. To paraphrase a line from one of my favorite movies, The Departed, you know, unaddressed emotions are like mushrooms. You know, they tend to grow in the dark. So address that stuff. Think about it. But don't use it as a bat to beat yourself over the head with. The more you try, the longer you try for, the better off you're going to be. Every effort that you make, no matter how short in length that effort may be, as many times as you have gone to the well, it is all valuable stuff that you can apply for your next effort. The outcomes get better and better and better the longer you try, and the more you examine those past times when perhaps maybe you've fallen a little short of the goal. Don't let a good mistake go to waste. Use it as data to help you make a better decision to take a different action next time down the road. If, as I mentioned earlier, if you would like to be sitting next to me having a chat while the microphones are on, so that you can tell your story and share it with members of our group, and help them in perhaps maybe a way that the same way you've been helped, if you have been helped by these conversations, even if it's just to inform people who you are, where you're from, where you've been, what you've done, things of that nature, right? Help us get to know you a little better. That would be great. You can reach out to me either before or after the Saturday meeting in Rock Hill at 742 North Anderson Road at 9 a.m. I usually get there with my lovely better half, usually about a half hour before the meeting starts, and always looking to catch up with people, chat, and if you would like to come on, feel free to tell me then. We can figure something out. Or you can send a message to the inbox, weighinginwithpatrick@gmail.com. It's a very lonely inbox. I don't get a lot of messages from anybody ever, never. Why don't you be the first person to send me a message? Maybe give us some feedback. Is this at all helpful to you? If so, how? What would you like more of? What would you like less of other than my voice? You're stuck with that. Sorry, it's my microphone. You're going to have to deal with my voice. But any feedback is valuable. We aren't looking to take this national. It's really about our group. Maybe at some point it might include another one of the Rock Hill groups. If you are in one of the other groups and you're listening to this podcast, feel free to provide me with some feedback as well. Or, if you would like, you can also volunteer to come on and share your story. Perhaps maybe some of your meeting tribe mates would benefit from your story. I think they would. And I guess that's really it. I'm kind of out of stuff for you tonight. I hope it has been helpful. I hope you learned something about Bruce. I didn't know he was a juggler. How about that? And as usual, whatever you do, don't give up. Hang in there. You can do it. Get out of there, Bear!